Take a network break, steep a hot cup of tea, visualize the perfect virtual donut, and join us for a speed round review of tech news that you can use. I'm your host, Drew Conry Murray, and joining me is Greg Farrow. We have kind of a short news cycle today, but before we jump in, I want to thank today's sponsors. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. You can enhance your technology aptitude with IT Pro TV. Keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code NETWORKBREAK30. This episode is also brought to you by CloudGenix, a leader in SD-WAN. And the Packet Pushers are hosting a live event with CloudGenix at Cisco Live in Las Vegas on Tuesday, July 12th in beautiful Mandalay Bay Hotel. And we'll have more details about that in just a little bit. Okay, jumping into the news, the networking startup Big Switch, they announced updates to its product lines. That's the Big Cloud Fabric. That's an SDN fabric that overlays on a physical network. And Big Monitoring Fabric, which competes with the likes of Gigamon and Ixia for monitoring and packet capture. For me, the big news is that the Cloud Fabric, it's doubling the number of leaf switches it can support in the fabric from 32 to 64, and announced a plugin that can support Kubernetes so that if you use Kubernetes to spin up a container, the plugin lets Big Switch plumb that container into the network.
Big Switch, of course, one of the first SDN companies to get out there and have a product in the market. And when they first started 3 or 4 years ago, it was like 8 switches or something, and everybody was going, oh, that's not big enough, it's not going to make it.
Yep.
Now it's at 64 leaf nodes, it's like, you know. So all the people who sort of tried to pretend that SDN wasn't going to work, yeah, right, well done. I was right, you're wrong. You know, we really should get a web page together, you know, of the predictions that we make, so we can actually, like, we should measure them or something, shouldn't we, really?
You know, maybe we could, like, crowdsource it, and people who listen, if they're interested, could weigh in and help us keep track, because yeah. I don't want to go through all the episodes.
Well, maybe we should just start one from now on. Every
time
we make
one, yes.
Make a prediction, and we write that down, and then every 3 months we go back and have a look at it. Yeah, every week we look at what we predicted 3 months ago or something, see how that's going or something. See if the predictions have come true or gone false. Anyway, Big Switch was one of the earliest companies. It was originally quite small, and, of course, they were OpenFlow-centric back in the day. They've now moved on into different sort of ways of doing things, but 64 switches, they haven't actually moved away from the flow-based model. So for those of you who think that OpenFlow doesn't work, it actually does. It's just taken time for the hardware to catch up. And we know that, of course, is the same story everywhere else, of course, because that's what happened in x86, that's what happened in storage. As the silicon improves, so does the software. Some key features around the big Cloud Fabric is it does NFV everywhere. So like other SDN products, it's now moving away from just, you know, configuring VLANs and stuff like that. It's now into conversation steering so that you can do network functions virtualization. They're doing integrations between the big cloud, big switch management platform and VMware and Red Hat Ceph. So basically what happens is if the big switch devices in the network, whether the virtual or the hardware devices, see a virtual SAN or see Ceph traffic, then it will automatically configure the network to treat that as storage traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and it knows where the vSAN and the Ceph traffic is in the network because it's talking to the configuration engine that vSAN runs in the vCenter, or in the case of Red Hat Ceph, it's actually talking to the Ceph controller. So it automatically knows which hosts need vSAN or are running storage traffic in a normal, like a modern storage traffic, not legacy, not that fiber channel or fiber channel over Ethernet stuff, that's all dead. But this stuff. And then, of course, they also now have support for OpenStack Liberty. They did some work with Red Hat. They did a 300 node scale test, including layer 4 to 7 services. So that means they had F5s, Palo Alto firewalls in there doing network functions virtualization. So generally, big Cloud Fabric is a significant step forward. Do you remember that briefing?
I do remember that briefing, yes.
Mm. It was quite impressive. It's sort of like this is what happens when you get the core stuff all sorted out. You start getting the fancy stuff on, you know. Once you've got a car. Remember when you were 17 and you bought a car and then the first thing you do is turn the wheels inside out and start to draw flames on the side?
Right.
Yeah, it's
right.
Just like that.
Yes, they've gone past. Yeah. they put their favorite band's bumper stickers on there and now they're moving on to more important things.
Their big monitoring fabric has now started to make some steps. It's pretty popular, their big monitoring fabric, as a strong alternative to the appliance-based market where they do packet capturing engines. So if you're using some of the other platforms out there that do that, Big Monitoring Fabric is a really cost-effective and much more capable way for some people. Now they're using advanced DPDK to do the processing, so they're getting faster, and they now got support for 40 and 100 gig modular switches. And seeing some interesting stuff come out there, I think Big Switch has pulled out a tidy off release here. And if you're looking at something, maybe you want to see a hardware-centric SDN solution, then Big Switch would be one that you want to look at.
Yeah, well done, Big Switch. Some other news from Juniper. Juniper is getting into the SD-WAN market. They announced a new product, the Cloud Enable Branch. It's a branch hardware device. You can either roll out the NFX 250 or the SRX 300 services gateway. Like other SD-WAN devices, it lets customers mix and match. You can have your MPLS, your broadband, LTE links, and set policies to send applications over one or different links depending on speed and performance and application policy. And these branch devices, they can also spin up virtualized applications. It supports Juniper's vSRX firewall, as well as third-party apps, including Silverpeak. Their WAN optimization controller can run on this box.
Juniper is extending the Contrail product now to outside the data center and into the WAN, which makes much more sense. But I don't think this is quite at the same level as the SD-WAN solutions we've seen from the more, you know, what we've been talking about for the last two or three years, like Viptela and VeloCloud, CloudGenix, Telari, and so forth. I think what we're really seeing here is putting Contrail in control of the edge routers. They're not doing multipath. They're not doing automated switchover. They're not doing application recognition. They're doing much more like what NewEdge Networks is doing and saying, we're going to use the controller that we use to manage devices in the data center and we're going to apply it to the WAN. Now you can manage your WAN. So if your WAN is software-defined because you're doing controller-based configuration and operations management, well, okay. But I think the real power in software-defined WAN is using internet with encrypted overlays with really smart intelligence at the edge. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't seem to be in this release. That doesn't mean that Juniper can't introduce it as time goes by, but they need to be careful not to take away their existing market for edge routing.
They're trying to straddle that. We don't want to destroy our existing product line, but we know we need to move forward where the market is going. So it's one of those tricky games.
Yeah, I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about the ramifications of this. So some of this is coming off the cuff. So treat it with, you know, a certain amount of cynicism. But it does look to me like, you know, Juniper needs to make sure that it stays strong in the WAN. Its MX series routers are really quite popular with a lot of people. But if they start to lose the edge devices, or maybe they could grow into the edge devices by getting their routers out into the edge or onto the client site. So a lot of people today have Juniper in the backbone, but they're using third-party devices right at the edge or someone else. Maybe Juniper could get this to work, but it's not SD-WAN. And for those people who are managed service providers, like welding together other people's networks, the current generation of SD-WAN products just completely blindside those managed service providers. So maybe this is a step for them. But again, to me, this is Contrail attached to the WAN, mostly focused on configuration and operations, not really focused on the features of SD-WAN that make it useful for most people.
Yeah, we didn't get a full briefing on this. We're just picking it up from press releases and news reports that were out there. I would welcome the opportunity to get a more deep dive to find out, you know, what SD-WAN capabilities they actually have besides just saying, you know, put your business traffic on an MPLS and put your YouTube traffic on broadband.
Yeah, it looks hardware-centric. Like, it looks like they're really focusing on this NFX device.
It does, yes.
You know, like, you've got to buy this device to be able to get these features. I'm not sure that a 10-port switch at every site is exactly what we're looking for. And maybe I'm missing something. Maybe it is for managed service providers to do POPs and HOPs.
Well, it seems like this is pretty heavily slanted toward managed service providers. It wasn't clear to me from the documentation whether it's specifically a managed service provider play or any old enterprise can go and buy these and set them up. There's some questions here we need to get answered.
But they did announce it, so yay.
Yay. All right, Juniper.
Yay!
Another SD-WAN product to add to our ever-growing list as well.
That's right, yes.
All right, moving on. Last week, we had talked a lot about the ongoing legal battle between Cisco and Arista, but those aren't the only tech companies in courts. A California jury just ruled that Oracle has to pay HPE $3 billion in damages over a contract dispute. And give you a little backstory in this case if you haven't been following it. Around 5 years ago, Oracle said it was going to stop developing software to run on the Itanium chip, and HPE was using that for its high-performance servers, so they got into a kerfuffle. There was a separate court decision that had already ruled that Oracle had breached a contract with HPE about supporting Itanium, and this trial that just ruled was to assess damages. But before HPE goes out and starts investing in more ivory back scratchers, Oracle says it's going to appeal this decision, so we don't know whether HPE is actually going to walk away with $3 billion.
Yeah, so I think this is about round four. So they've been through the first rounds. This is actually a trial by jury, and the jury has awarded the result to HPE. Mm-hmm. And I think the jury set the damages too, so $3 billion in damages to HPE. So a substantial win for them. However, Oracle is, of course, going to appeal. This is only the first round of court cases and has been a successful Oracle will appeal. Oracle loves its day in court. It has so many of them going on, you'd have to wonder if it's not a way of doing business. But that said, the Itanium, of course, if you were following the story, was really that I can remember sitting in an airport in 2006 with an Itanium sales rep for Intel going, this product's dead. As dead as a dodo. Oh, it's already dead. We've moved away from it. The idea was that the Itanium would be a RISC architecture, not a CISC architecture like the x86 was. And it was pretty clear that nobody cared too much about Itanium. But HPE had been betting the Itanium in, I think it's Superdome range. I could be wrong. And they were relying on Oracle to do something. I'm not exactly sure. Can't remember the exact details because who cares? You know, Oracle pulled out and said, no, we're not going to write software for Itaniums anymore. The HPUCs had to take a hit and then respin their hardware platform because Intel stopped making the Itanium. Mm-hmm. And so because Oracle stopped doing it, they sued them. Looks like it's going to stick so far. You know, you'd have to say that you win a jury awarded trial. Generally, the courts further up won't go against the jury as a broad statement.
Perhaps in an appeal, maybe they'll lower the damages, but if they've already ruled that there was a breach of contract and this was damages, I think Oracle's probably going to walk away having to pay some amount of money.
They're going to have a really good basis on which to lay an appeal if a jury has decided. It's not a judge that's decided here, it's a jury.
I think we can agree that the real winners here are definitely the lawyers, though.
I mean, I remember when this happened, it was a massive hit to HPE's business at that point in time that Oracle wouldn't write for the HPUCs platform, which was running the Itanium CPUs, if I'm mm-hmm. remembering right. A lot of customers were sort of like instantly end of life. And the thing that you've got to remember about companies like HPE and IBM and Cisco is that they quite often sign 20-year, 30-year, 40-year support contracts on this gear, believe it mm-hmm. or not, right? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that? But, I mean, they do.
I cannot imagine that. 20 years?
Yeah. Seriously, they do. You know, there's still people out there. Somebody put out a tweet this week saying that the VAT, the value added tax calculation system in the UK, still runs on a DEC VAX. So, you know, somebody inside a HP is still selling and supporting that VAX equipment.
Wow, that is amazing.
20 years? There are systems out there that, like nuclear reactors, they last for 50. Mm-hmm. So, and recertifying that technology takes 5 years to 10 years and costs tens of millions of dollars to replace the computers by the time you design them and test them and validate them and then take them out and blah, blah, blah. And so you're very reluctant to play with these systems, so it's much easier just to keep them going. And that's the sort of stuff that's happening here.
Okay. Well, let's pause quickly to thank our sponsor, IT Pro TV. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. You can gain access to the most important tools needed to prepare for your IT certification and general learning. Greg, you want to give us some more details?
Yeah, IT Pro TV is, of course, you've heard about it on the show a few times, but don't forget that there's like over 1,000 hours of high-quality video content, and there's been new courses added since we started running these ads, so maybe it's time to go and check it out if you haven't since. The courses are streamed live, so if you're actually interested to see them as they're being produced, but you can then watch them on demand on any of your favorite devices, even weird things like Chromecasts and Rokus. Does anybody still use a Roku?
There must be somebody. Yeah, if somebody's still running a deck, somebody's still using Roku.
Is anybody using PCs anymore? No, I'm just joking. Course topics include the CompTIA. So if you're studying for a course, there are course topics like CompTIA, Security Practitioner, CCMP Security, Microsoft Server. But my point is that you should probably have a subscription to one of these services so that you can just drop in and learn stuff. If you want to learn a little bit about ethical hacking, you want to learn a little bit about crypto, you want to learn a little bit about, you know, different types of things. These things are great for being able to drop in on a Saturday afternoon with a beer. And instead of watching people play sports ball, why don't you watch a couple of these videos for a few hours and relax? With IT Pro TV, if you do want to sit the exam, you do get access to the Transcender PACS practice exams. One low monthly subscription price, a no hassle cancellation policy. There's group pricing, so get the boss to pay for it on his credit card. And check it out.
Yeah, so please do check out itpro.tv/networkbreak to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 a year, but there's a special offer for Network Break listeners. You can try it free for 7 days if you sign up using the code NETWORKBREAK30 and check out the courses, the live streams, and more. You'll also get 30% off the lifetime of your account, which comes to less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Thanks, IT Pro TV. Back to the news, Cisco is continuing its acquisition spree. It bought a company called CloudLock for $293 million.
Yeah, CloudLock, Cisco remains on a spending spree of small companies. When I say small, $293 million is not overly, not that small compared to most other acquisitions in the startup space, but this is another one for the cloud security portfolio. So remember that just recently in the recent shakeups in Cisco, the security and the enterprise BUs were actually merged together under a single team. That and as I've said before, I believe that this is a sign that Cisco regards the enterprise market as fundamentally finished or capped. There's not a lot of growth going on. So now we're into a consolidation phase. This is a software product. It is not a hardware product. And more importantly, it is not a networking product. It's not something that works on a private network. That is, like OpenDNS, when Cisco bought OpenDNS, it's a cloud service that sits out there. It's used for MDM, mobile device management, so that you can put security on staff phones, smartphones, remote laptops and things like that. Because increasingly, customers actually aren't connecting to the network. They're not connecting to your private network. They're not connecting to your WAN. They're only ever connected to the internet. So if you're going to extend a security policy out to those devices that are only got internet connections, you have to have some sort of tooling to get into those devices. And that's CloudLock.
Yeah, it sounds like they're focused on both infrastructure as a service and software as a service security. So if you've got, you know, Salesforce or Dropbox or whatever, and you want to make sure that your corporate data, even though it's out in these systems, isn't walking away, that's where CloudLock seems to be playing.
That's right. So basically, as the article from Fortune points out, the service essentially lets companies monitor their users and their data that has been migrated outside of their private servers. You know, which is just about everybody these days.
Right.
So while the cloud providers have security features, you know, so everybody says Amazon's more secure and Google's more secure than your private data center, which is silly. But anyway, but you still don't know who's accessing your data or not. So this is the missing piece of that puzzle for Cisco. They'll be able to fold that into their security portfolio with, you know, OpenDNS and so on.
Congratulations, CloudLock. The $293 million is a pretty good exit.
Yeah, considering they only had $23 million in funding.
That's right.
And they've got another, the rumor is there's still more on top for earnouts as well.
Very good.
Lovely.
All right, moving on. Mellanox, they're announcing ConnectX 5. That's the latest version of their 100 gig InfiniBand and Ethernet adapter line. It's a system on a chip. It comes with an RDMA adapter. It's built on ARM cores, integrated into one ASIC. Mellanox, they're targeting storage, networking, and security appliances with the adapter, specifically around cloud and NFV workloads.
Yep, exactly. So Mellanox, you might know about them for their switches, which is what I've been mainly familiar with. But we've talked recently around their Blue Lock processors. Mm-hmm. They also have, which is going onto the network adapters, but ConnectX 5 is their chip that goes onto the adapters for your 100 gig IB and Ethernet. So keep in mind that for customers who are doing really, really high performance, driving these things really, really hard, often high performance compute or supercompute, they're using these Mellanox NICs as standard equipment because they're using RDMA to do high volume, high speed, low latency data transfers between things. Mm-hmm. This chip is absolutely the dog's bollocks when it comes to this thing. This thing goes like the clappers.
Although, so is dog's bollocks a good thing or a bad thing? we need a translation layer here.
It's the duck's guts, as my dad used to say.
It's still not clarified here.
It's the stuff. It's the shiz.
Okay.
I've run across quite a lot of companies in the high-performance compute space, and their default situation is to buy Mellanox. There are others. You know, we've talked about Netronome and Solarflare in the past. There's lots of other companies who produce high-performance NICs at various levels or accelerators or things like that. But I think Mellanox at the ConnectX 5, they've been doing this for a very long time, and they own the silicon that goes onto it, and that's their competitive advantage. They have a highly integrated stack, custom silicon, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Not for everybody, but definitely for those who want it, that's what you want. High performance goes like hell. And if you're running InfiniBand, you know what you want.
And Mellanox, courtesy of Network Break, maybe a new tagline for you, it's the dog's bollocks.
I don't think so.
All right, another quick break to talk about our sponsor, CloudGenix. CloudGenix is a software-defined WAN leader, revolutionizing the networking by transforming legacy WANs into radically simplified, secure, application-defined fabrics. CloudGenix lets customers achieve more than twice the performance at less than half the cost. And if you're going to be in Las Vegas in July for Cisco Live, you can join CloudGenix and the Packet Pusher's very own Ethan Banks at a live event. Greg, you want to tell us about it?
Cisco Live. So Ethan's going to be there. They're holding an event in the Mandalay Bay. It's going to be close to where you are. Why don't you get along and see Ethan and have some free drinks at CloudGenix and maybe find out a little bit more about their software-defined WAN product. As I've said before, CloudGenix is a pretty interesting company to me because of their application inspection engine, which is superior, I think, to what we've seen in some of the others. They've definitely focused on that. And maybe you could get a bit of a demo of that and see that at the event.
That's right. They're also having a little game. So if you're a certified network admin or higher, they're having the I Want CloudGenix Challenge. It's a simple multi-round match between deploying and operating CloudGenix and Cisco IWAN. Each round consists of normal everyday WAN management tasks, and everyone who completes the tasks faster using CloudGenix, you get a t-shirt and a drone giveaway. So if you're interested in playing that game or just hanging out with CloudGenix and Ethan, that is taking place 6 to 8 p.m. at Mandalay Bay in the Oriole Restaurant on Tuesday, July 12th at Cisco Live. And thank CloudGenix for being a sponsor. Back to the news. I picked up on a couple of stories. Brexit happened recently. The UK voted to leave the European Union, and suddenly the whole world seemed to freak out a little bit. Certainly the public markets, the pound fell, stock market collapsed, although it's come back recently. Question was, how is this affecting tech? And it doesn't seem like, you know, from a couple of stories that I picked up that there's really much worry there. A case in point, Amazon says it's on track to open a new data center in London. London, of course, has long served as a financial heart of Europe. The data center is scheduled to open later this year, early next. Of course, one complication is privacy. EU has very strict privacy rules. What happens with the UK, whether when they leave, if they continue to adopt those rules or adjust them, it's going to be an issue for Amazon and customers to work out. But according to the story from Bloomberg, Amazon's still on board, going to roll out that data center.
It's going to be pretty interesting, actually, because there's still the fallout from the disruption still happening here. We still haven't got, obviously, the Prime Minister has resigned. And I don't really want to go into the politics behind this. I think there's going to be several things that happen here, and I'm not sure that this is actually the right view. Things that are in the pipeline, like the Amazon data center, that's so far down the pipe. If it's opening next year, it's all done. The money's all spent. The plans are going
out. That's right. Yes, that money's sunk.
That money's gone, right? So they're not going to stop it now. I read a report from IDC who predicted a 2 to 5% shrinkage in IT markets in the UK as a result. Obviously, as the pound gets weaker, products get more expensive. Most IT comes in from offshore. So as the pound shrunk by 10%, dropped 10% in value. So that's going to be an impact. I think we're going to see some fairly interesting impacts in terms of startups down in London, where they rely on a thing called passporting. That is, anybody who flies into London, if you've got a legitimate passport to enter the UK, then you can just travel anywhere in Europe. So if you're running a startup in London, which is a great place to do it because the money's in London, Americans like to come to London, you know, there's a lot of money in Silicon Valley coming over to London and is a great thing. Those companies have been very solidly recruiting the best talent they can find in Germany, France, Italy, Spain, particular, you know, down in Greece and those countries, and bringing them to London to work in the startups. You know how startups love to say they find the best in the world and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. If the UK closes its borders as the referendum said, then you might see an interesting situation where startups will move probably to Germany, probably Frankfurt, I think. And the focus for tech startups in the European area may actually move over to the main European area, because there's a hell of a lot more people in the European area than there are in the UK. And if they have to go through passport hassles, they'll just want to go away. I mean, it's hard enough in the US getting H-1Bs for offshore workers. Imagine if you had to do that in London, which is a secondary market at best.
That's true, although London has the advantage of being an English-speaking country.
Will this be a thing or will it not? You know, like, will it balance out? I mean, we've already seen the UK stock market bounce back. It went down like, you know, billions were lost, blah, blah, blah. And today it's already above where it was when it
That's
fell.
Right.
You know,
That's
so
right.
I think it's, you know, people are overreacting. There's a whole bunch of political stuff, which we're not going to get into here. This isn't the forum for it. Drawing any conclusions about what's going to happen to companies or not, it's just way too early to know what the results are going to be.
Right. One more data point. Bloomberg also had a story about Eric Schmidt, who's the chairman of Alphabet, which is the parent company of Google. Eric Schmidt was saying, quote, "It would be hard for me to imagine we'd make much of a change," end quote, in regard to the company's operations overseas in the UK. As you say, it's early days. We don't know what the shakeout is, but the UK is still an important market for US tech companies. Mm. Even if it becomes less of a gateway to the wider European community, it's still a foothold. It's still an important location. We may see some disruption, but I can't imagine chaos and
destruction. So what he's saying there is that the UK is the ninth largest economy in the world. like Google, it's like Germany, France, Britain are the top three economies. I'm not sure in which order exactly it is. You know, they're not going to change their business model here in the UK. Google only has a sales office here. They have most of their offices are actually in Ireland.
Right, yeah.
So their European head office is in Ireland, in Dublin. So,
well, definitely a story we'll keep an eye on as we see how all of this shakes out. Okay, our last story for the day, SDX Central is citing some unnamed sources claiming that Microsoft made a $4 billion bid for Docker, the container startup, and Docker said, no thanks.
That's pretty ballsy, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, if it was valued at $4 billion and they're walking away from it, I find that very difficult to believe. Docker hasn't got a lock on this market. They're successfully executing, by all means. But I think, you know, CoreOS is also showing you exactly how it's done. There's plenty of other stuff around the LXC stuff, which Docker consumes in a various sorts of ways. You know, at $4 billion, it's getting up towards VMware valuations. I'm not sure Docker's worth as much as VMware. Let me look up what VMware's worth.
And while you're doing that, the story that I read from SDX Central had the Docker founder saying that he believes in the long term Docker is going to actually become as valuable as VMware. So he thinks $4 billion undervalued the company, that it's going to grow to VMware kind of stature and level, making the company worth a lot more than Microsoft was willing to pay reportedly.
Yeah, I could see that. But and definitely Microsoft needs to have a container strategy because, in effect, Google is leading the container thing. Amazon's rapidly following on with it. Also serverless, you know, Amazon's been very big around its Lambda and its serverless strategy. Microsoft needs to do something in this space. It doesn't sort of have, like Azure hasn't got, I mean, it's only just got Linux. So maybe having Docker would have given them a boost up or some credibility that, you know, containers will happen in Azure faster than not.
Right.
So VMware has a market cap today of around $24 billion. So that's valuing Docker as 1/6 of a VMware.
Mm-hmm.
That's, wow.
Which is pretty good for, what? How old is Docker? 2 years old, maybe?
I'm not sure. You could look it up, but, you know, it's raised $180 million. If you were offered $4 billion for that, I'm pretty sure the investors would have gone for it.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, walking away from an offer like that, you got to have some stones.
Oh, look, and that would have been cash. That's not like
that's right.
You know, Microsoft pays cash. They buy outright. They don't futz around.
Here comes the Microsoft dump truck full of money.
It's not like we'll do a share deal. We'll give you some of our stock and some cash, and not very much cash. But, you know,
that's right.
Microsoft buys you. It's like, give me Microsoft stock. That's cash right there, basically.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I don't find this particularly credible. I'm fairly sure that Microsoft expressed some interest in buying it. These people are always talking about, you know, maybe we should buy you, blah, blah, blah. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, a $4 billion number doesn't make sense. And whether it was a serious offer or not, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Interesting to speculate on, though.
Yeah, sure. Make all the speculation you like.
That's right.
But just try and
all
make
this
it
pretend
realistic.
Money.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but I doubt for $4 billion that the investors in Docker would have said no on $180 million, you know.
Value, yeah.
And $180 million is the cash raised over the life cycle of the company, which is just, you know, 4 or 5 years. That's a good exit. You would have taken that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I don't think you're thinking this is going to be the next EMC.
Well, we'll see. All right, well, that brings us to the end of the show today. It was a quick week for news, but Greg, if folks want to get more from you, where can they find it?
I'm on the Twitter, is at Ethereal Mind. You can find me on LinkedIn and Facebook, but mostly on my blog at etherealmind.com. I'm starting to find more and more to write about. I'm shifting to a shorter, faster blogging style. I worked for a little while on making my blog posts longer and deeper, and I just sort of stopped writing, really. So I'm going to go back to my normal stream of consciousness, blurting out little posts as well as the big ones. And hopefully that will be more interesting to you. So etherealmind.com.
All right. I'm Drew Condry Murray. I'm on Twitter at Drew_CM. I blog at packetpushers.net. Thanks to our sponsors, IT Pro TV and CloudGenix. And thanks to you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you like the show, please give us a like on Facebook, leave a recommendation on iTunes, or share a link with your friends. And please check out our newsletters. That's Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation. You can find all of that at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.